Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
The US Supreme Court is considering Donald Trump's claim that as a former president, he is immune from criminal prosecution, and its answer will determine whether he can be tried of charges of trying to subvert the results of the 2020 election. Well, Marion McKeown is US correspondent with the Business Post, and she joins me on the line now. So, Marion, will you take us through Donald Trump's argument? Why is he saying he should be entitled to immunity?
Hello, Claire. Yeah, it was a fascinating day in American courts yesterday. We had Donald Trump in a very tawdry case in New York, and then we had this very approach by the conservative judges in the Supreme Court. So basically, Donald Trump's argument for immunity, crudely put, is which Donald Trump again said yesterday, is that if you don't have presidential immunity against, you know, potential criminal prosecution, as he says, it's the end of the country. It's the end of the presidency as we know it. It's patently not true. And the argument for unqualified presidential immunity, as was laid out yesterday by Trump's lawyers, was so in and so, I thought, painfully nonsensical that you would imagine it would get very short shrift, because the examples that were given were, you know, should a president, what if a president orders a military coup? Should he be immune from any prosecution in that? What if he orders the assassination of a political opponent? And the judges, the five of the conservative judges, four in particular, seemed really inclined to think that there should be presidential immunity for official acts, even if the president commits crimes in what would he would say is the pursuance of his presidential duties. Now, this was on the conservative side. You had judges like Ketanji Brown Jackson, who were saying absolutely not the case. You cannot turn the White House into a criminal enterprise. And if you give unqualified immunity, this is basically what you're going to be doing. But to me, the most astonishing thing, and I listened to these arguments for almost 3 hours, was that the refusal and the reluctance of the conservative judges to deal with the case before them. The case before them was very, very simple. And, you know, just a quick recap for the listeners. Donald Trump, as US president, had no role in the conduct or the things that happen to determine the winner of a presidential election. There is no role for the president in that, in any law or in any part of the US Constitution. The states decide who wins the elections in their states, each of the 50 states. They then appoint electors. Those electors go to Congress, and Congress then accepts the electors and basically rubber stamps the winner. There is no role, and that's overseen by the vice president. It's very deliberate that there's no role for a president in that, particularly a sitting president, because the outcome will affect them. Mm-hmm. Now, what the court seemed to be suggesting, or what the Supreme Court justices seemed to be concerned about there, was whether or not there should be, and in particular, Samuel Alito, who regards himself as the intellect on the bench, basically said, well, you know, if you don't have immunity for presidents, surely that will make them want to stay in office. Surely then they won't want to leave office. That will encourage them to commit coups. That will encourage them to refuse to leave office because they'll be afraid of being criminally prosecuted when they leave for criminal acts they committed. So it was astonishing. And as I say, a real lack of interest in dealing with the merits of the case before them, and a real sense that these conservative justices do not and will not send this back in a way that it will be dealt with before the November election.
So how many of the nine do you think he had on his side?
Well, you know, I don't want to say on his side, but what I want to say is the four judges in particular who wanted to dive into bewildering hypotheticals and grandiosity, talking about a ruling for the ages. It's not a ruling for the ages. You can only rule on a case in front of you. And this was in particular Neil Gorsuch, Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito and Brett Kavanaugh, who were all talking about the future. And the astonishing thing is that this is the first time in 250 years that a president, apart from Richard Nixon, has committed criminal acts to try and stay in power, in office. And they're acting as though this is going to be happening every day in the future. So I thought that they were very cynically sidestepping the issue before them. Now, there is a question about whether some presidential acts should be immune. They said the power of veto, for example, or the power to issue pardons. I would say, what if you're issuing a pardon? What if a president says, I'll give you a pardon if you go out and kill someone for me? Should that be, it's an official act, but should there even be immunity for that? But certainly for private acts, everything Donald Trump did to do with January 6th was a private act. He had no official capacity, and the judges were not willing to recognise that fact or look at the case before them. Mm-hmm. It was like it was the elephant in the room. Honestly, I think the Supreme Court's a bit like the royal family. The more you see them, the more disillusioned you get.
And tell
the
me,
mystique suited them.
Is there a timeline on when their decision on this is due then?
Well, it's anticipated, and again, there is no firm timeline, that they will issue a ruling before their term ends at the end of June. Now, they could say, oh, well, this is too complicated, we might wait until October. But what's more likely is that they will issue a ruling, and it seems the hints they were giving, particularly John Roberts, the Chief Justice, that they would send this back to Tanya Chutkan and say to her, you now have to distinguish between official acts of a president which may be entitled to immunity and private acts which even Trump's lawyers conceded are not. And then what would immediately happen then, we know, is Trump's lawyers will appeal whatever conclusion she comes to. Then it will go back to the DC Court of Appeals and probably back up to the Supreme Court. So this could go on for a year mm-hmm. or longer. And that seems to be, honestly, without being cynical, what the conservative justice seem to be gearing towards. They didn't even acknowledge, apart from Amy Coney Barrett, the need for speed, or the Jack Smith's concern about getting this before the voters, so they would know basically what they are voting for in November, whether or not Donald Trump was guilty of these charges, whether there could be a convict in the White House. And as I say, the conservative justices seem to have no interest whatsoever in whether or not the voters are entitled to this information and whether they should have it before November 5th.
Now, Marion, I want to ask you separately about these protests that have been sweeping through college sure. campuses around the United States. And the protesters want the universities to boycott companies and individuals too, with time to Israel. How widespread are the protests becoming?
They have taken off like wildfire. It started initially in a handful of colleges. They have spread across the country from New York to California. There are hundreds of people, students being arrested, protesters being arrested, and the colleges don't seem to know how to deal with this. There is a First Amendment right to protest. Now, there is not a First Amendment right to harass individuals. There is not a First Amendment right to hate speech. But there is a distinction. There's a tendency in America to lump any protests against anything Israel does, to equate it and conflate it with absolute anti-Semitism. In fact, these students are protesting the conduct, Israel's prosecution of the war in Gaza and the civilian toll and the human suffering, the famine that's been caused by the way in which this war is being prosecuted. But a number of people in the States where there is huge passion about this, and there's huge passion about Israel's right to self-defense, and it's very, very muddy. So it seems that these students are not being allowed, certainly in the public discourse, they are not seen as being entitled to the same First Amendment freedom of speech rights as other students protesting other things are. It's a very, very volatile situation. And I really don't know how it's going to play out. We can't forget that one of the factors here is that very, very wealthy donors, who have donated tens of millions of dollars to Ivy League colleges and prestige colleges like Harvard, Yale, have either stopped their funding already or threatened to remove it because they believe that these protests should not be allowed and that there shouldn't be protests against Israel. And so it's a very complicated process. And as I say, it's very volatile. And you have a number of USC has just cancelled its main commencement speech over the Gaza war protests. protests. You have colleges like Columbia where are now just offering online classes. And there seems to be no agreement on how to deal with this. It's causing a huge amount of anxiety amongst students and amongst Jewish students, I have to say, who say that they're feeling that these are anti-Semitic protests and that they are being targeted, which of course would be completely unacceptable if that is the case.
As you say, graduation ceremonies being cancelled and exams being moved to new locations too. Marion, thank you so much. That's Marion McKeown there from the Business Post. Coming up next, Brian O'Connell will have an update on those water quality problems in Cork that he has told us about in the recent past, and he'll have a response too from Ishka Aaron.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.